Hey, listeners. Before we get started with the show, I want to let you know that we are doing a listener survey because even though we're 4 years in, we don't really know that much about you. So if you could head over to our website, higher-ed.social/survey, that'd be great. There's only a couple questions that we need you to fill out. And if you do, you can actually enter to win a free seat for you and your campus colleagues to the upcoming Higher Ed Experts Analytics Conference. That is a $500 value, my friends. So head over to our website, higher-ed.social/survey, and please fill out the survey. If your friends are listeners of the show, send it along to them too. Tell them to enter, and they can win. Thanks. I'm Jackie Vetrano from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
And I'm Logan Bishop from Belmont University. You're listening to Higher Ed Social, part of the Connect EDU network.
I was at a kid's birthday party and like our best friend and my son's best friend. So like everybody's here, everybody's drinking wine, and the kid's mom, who's like our friend, just like tosses a one of those little fire starter, like little log things, and a lighter at me. And she's like, go outside and start a fire in the fire pit. And I was like, okay. And she's like, the wood's on the other side of the house. Just take whatever you need and make a fire. And I was like, okay. So that's what I did at a kid's birthday party, was start a fire. And now I smell like smoke. So ta-da, there's the fun story of the day.
Good. The more important question is, did you contain the fire?
Oh, it was in a fire pit.
So, good.
Yeah, so it was good. I even checked the rocks around the fire pit to make sure that there was no like chert or anything, because that tends to explode whenever it's in a fire pit. So, you know, fun fact, chert has a very high water content and explodes if you use it in a campfire. So you should learn what chert is and not to use it around your fire circle.
Good to know.
Yeah, I learned that in geology. So fun fact.
Wonderful.
See, using that geology minor
every day. Anyway, I guess we can get rolling on in the show.
Sure.
It's like insane because we are in our first few episodes of 2019 and I'm still not used to it.
Right.
A little bit weird. Are you still writing 2018? Have you messed up yet?
So far, no, but it's only been a few days, so give me some time.
Yeah, right. I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I really had to write anything.
Last year, I've done it every day.
Oh, great.
For the first, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
Yep. This year, I've been lucky.
Actually, yeah, now
I've done it twice on my, in two meetings, writing notes in my on my iPad, I wrote 2018, and I'm like, ugh, it's not 2018 anymore.
Yep.
Right.
I think I may have done that, too, now that I think about it. I have, like, one of those journals that you write every day. You just write a little summary of your day. And I'm pretty sure I have to go look at it because I think I might have dated it wrong the last 5 days or whatever.
Whoops.
I really think I might have. Now I'm going to have to go check. Anyway, Happy New Year. Welcome to the show. We're really glad to have you. I guess we can get started. You can introduce yourself for our listeners.
Sure. Happy New Year to both of you and everybody else who's listening. My name is Miloš Topić. I'm the Vice President for Information Technology and Operations and Chief Information Officer at St. Peter's University in Jersey City. That is in Jersey. Operations piece speaks to facilities as well. So I guess no good deed goes unpunished. I've joined the school about 4 years ago. Yeah. Joined the school about 4 years ago as Chief Technology Officer. About a year into my tenure there, I was promoted to Vice President CIO and asked to, in addition to IT, to take on operations and facilities, which I did. So for the last 3 years, I've been responsible for both areas.
Wowee. Is that common?
No. In most schools, so I've been here for four. Prior to that, I worked at Montclair State University for 14 and a half years in five different roles. And generally, since they're both very large areas, you have vice presidents for one and then the other, and it's very rare that they're joined. Now, it's not something that doesn't happen at all, but it's not a common occurrence.
Yeah, we were like that for years. So I definitely understand, like, that is crazy. You have a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately enough, I only sleep 4 hours a night, so that's pretty good. But,
oh, that's good.
But when I joined St. Peter's University, Vice President for Finance, the CFO, was at that time in charge of most of the things. So very similar to what you were saying, Logan, HR, IT, facilities, campus safety, finance and accounting, all of that was under this individual. Things have since changed, but when I arrived, probably five major areas were under the CFO.
That's crazy.
Wow, that's insanely overwhelming.
Yeah. Which I think people realized and then made timely adjustments.
So I'm assuming then that your background is in more of the IT world and you're learning a lot about facilities and all of that side.
Right. So my undergrad is computer science and math. My first master's is information systems, second MBA, and now I'm hopeful that at some point this spring I will complete my PhD at Stevens in business administration. So yes, all of my experience, my last 20 years, have all been in IT in various roles of kind of gradually increasing responsibilities. Facilities and operations, I've learned as I've worked with those counterparts over the past and at different institutions. And then again, you know, having been in Jersey for the last 20 years, everybody in Jersey is in some way, shape, or form in construction and facilities. So you pick up quickly.
I've always found it in talking with our facilities folks, because I'm in marketing, but we surprisingly do a lot of marketing about our facilities, as far as from a standpoint of energy efficiency. We're really striving to be a green university. We have, you know, some really cool heating and cooling systems, which, you know, you wouldn't think were cool until you know we created our own like geothermal heating and cooling and chill beam whatever this and that, and it's
you're
just
doing a great job marketing it, Logan.
I know, right? I can't remember it all off the top
whatever,
of my
whatever.
Head.
Recycling.
But there's a lot of cool stuff that happens in that world too that I did not expect. Like, you know, there is a thing that people think about. The facilities folks are the people that fix stuff, but they also do so much more than that. And you know, I always find that kind of awesome.
Yeah, the kind of facilities of the past were always generally looked at as electricians and plumbers, and then folks who move your stuff. Which today in modern universities is very far from the truth.
What do you think is the most, I guess, like unknown or unappreciated aspect of facility services on a campus?
That there are 24/7, 365 operation, right? Generally, folks, most places, whether they work 8 to 4, 9 to 5, 10 to 6, when they leave, they've left. Other than, you know, obviously emails and texts that we're also overwhelmed with every day, they're gone. Facilities folks, campus safety, IT, and a few others are always on, whether they're physically working shifts overnight. Another aspect that's really important is whenever there's a snowstorm, and up in Northeast in Jersey, we get a number of them every year. Facilities are folks who are going in when everybody else is leaving, right? They're coming in to make sure things are clean and the roads are plowed and the campus is safe for everybody else to come in. So they are, to a very large degree, unsung heroes of many campuses. They're not appreciated. It's not that shiny or highly visible in many areas, but they do a lot of things that are essential for a modern day university.
That's for sure. And then you have the flip side of it where you watch students complaining, you know, on social media when the school's not closing because of like a couple flakes and, you know, complaining about how they have to walk to class and all that. It's like everybody's got to work too. Like there's people that have to maintain the campus when you get to be in your room when your class gets canceled.
Yeah.
Plus someone's got to keep your room warm, right?
Yeah.
Right. It varies. At times, there are obviously valid concerns. Like I mentioned earlier, I worked at Montclair State University for 14 and a half years, and we had some very serious blizzards during those years. And Montclair State University's president back then and currently used to live in Minnesota for about 5 or 6 years. And, you know, winters of Minnesota are much worse than those in Jersey. So she would often not close campus until the last moment, which caused a lot of issues. But folks always have to make their own decisions because I think safety is paramount. Best to miss a class or be late an hour or two than to have much larger difficulties to deal with.
Right.
Like dealing with insurance because you crashed your car into a light pole. I mean, I hate to say it, but missing class probably was worth it in that sense. And that's, you know, that's kind of what we tell our students too. Always make your own decision because that is what's important. And, you know, we can worry about the missing class thing later, you know?
I agree. And that what you just said, this goes, should extend way beyond classes, should really extend across all of our lives.
Yeah.
Because I'm a strong believer that, you know, we are in charge of our lives. Right. There's a lot of things around us that may not be ideal, but way too frequently we can use them, or we often use them as excuses for we're not doing what we can do to make things better. So we should own our lives, take control, and make our own decisions and move forward in that fashion, no matter what we do.
That's a good way to think.
Now, if only we can get every single student to listen to that.
It's one of those things that
students,
you pick up in
faculty,
life.
And everybody else.
Yeah.
It is a wisdom thing that you kind of pick up when you get a little older. But, you know, if you thought that way when you were younger, you know, you gotta have fun too. So that's important too. So, I mean, growing up and learning things the hard way is part of growing up and part of the fun of growing up, I guess. And, you know, that's frustrating for us sometimes to see kids not really realizing that. But, you know, when they do, hey, it feels pretty good, right? Especially if you're the one that told them and that's what made them click, right? So that's good.
Absolutely. I'm all about, I mean, I don't want you to misunderstand me. I'm all about enjoying life and having fun.
Oh, yeah, no, I totally
what,
think
I,
so.
What I was getting at is, you know, it's not the environment around you or somebody who might be 4,000 miles away from you that controls your life. Mm-hmm. It's you.
Absolutely.
Because it's your life.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So,
for sure.
And then having kids, I have a 6-year-old boy and a 3-year-old girl. And they give you a whole new perspective on life. When you see them, how fearless they are, how confident they are, how honest and sincere they are, you know, you start wondering and asking yourself, at what point in life did we lose this? Because they're so honest and so sincere and they're so upfront with their thoughts and emotions and feelings that I think life would be much better off if all of us were like that.
Sometimes. I had a pretty rough trip back from a kid's birthday party today, and I kind of wish my son would have just, you know, not screamed and let us know what was on his mind the whole time about wanting to stay and play with the super huge Hot Wheels thing that his friend got for Christmas that he did not. So
yeah, like, there's that still.
Yeah, I never thought that a kid could get, like, it literally is a parking garage. It is a parking garage with a gorilla climbing up the side, which is, you know, I was telling him, I was like, I'm glad that you're excited about this, Simon. It is I am happy that you're, but it's a parking garage. It's a 7-story parking garage. That's all it is. It's got a car wash on the top floor, which is incredibly impractical, but, you know, sure. Anyway, that's good.
He probably didn't agree with you for a second.
He didn't. No. Especially on the it's time to go home part.
Right.
We've talked about the facilities part. Obviously, you started there as the chief technology officer. What kinds of things do you do there? Like, what's your leadership style?
It's a great question. I don't think I have one. There is no. I've found over the years that it's very difficult to say this is how I do things all the time. Because you work with different people in different parts or points in their own careers and lives. and you have different needs, you have different resources, different teams. You yourself might have different priorities. Generally, the only thing that's consistent for me that I always put people first. It's not technology, right? It's always people. And you've heard this in the past from a lot of folks. You have people, process, technology. Understanding what people need, what drives them, what motivates them, is critical to building a high-performing team. So empowering folks. Someone might just need to come in a bit later or leave a bit earlier or might need to have slightly different title. And then there are others who, you know, just want more money. But not everybody's motivated the same way. That's one. And then two is really sitting down, especially if you have a smaller team, you can do this, sitting down with every single individual and listening and then asking follow-up questions and figuring out what do they want to do, right? Where do they want to be in 3 to 5 years? Mm-hmm. And then helping them get there. Because once you do that, once people see that you're really there for them, you're the one who takes all the blame. They're the ones who take all the credit. Spotlight is on them. Whenever there's an issue, whether it's with the cabinet or the board or a major vendor issue, a major project issue, you're the one who's up front. You're not standing behind them. You're standing up front. Mm-hmm. And you're providing air cover for them. Once you do that, once people really see that you truly are someone who puts them ahead of themselves, it's remarkable what the same team, same people will do and how they will perform for you versus how they worked with somebody else who was there before you.
Mm-hmm. That's really good leadership advice.
What was that like for you making that transition into your current role? Like, obviously you've led before, you've had teams before, but this is a little bit different.
You don't know what you don't know, right? Mm-hmm. Until you come across things that you've never done before. But I'm generally someone by very nature, someone who embraces risks and challenges. I personally always want to grow, and I'm always interested in larger scale for a very long time. So one thing that I want to clarify, just my own personal thoughts and experiences, is that leaders are not the ones who have the titles. Leaders are the ones who lead people. Mm-hmm. And it's not the same. You have a lot of folks who have, who are in positions of authority, who have leadership titles, but they may not be leaders. They may not even be good managers, but they happen to be there for whatever reason. Whether it's political, they've been there the longest, or whomever, right? It's important to, because I've had issues, I mean, not issues, I've had examples in the past where I was at associate director or director level, where I led teams where we were all peers. But mm-hmm. you have something that, you know, you were willing to sacrifice yourself. You, when you're in a meeting and everybody talks before the meeting, I'm going to tell the CIO X and Y and Z, or the president, or the provost. And then the meeting happens and nobody says a word, right? But that one person who always spoke was always me. So I always looked and I always wanted to do something where I can do whatever I can to help as many people as I possibly can. One of the things that always comes to mind is my best friend and I will never forget this, when I was right before I left Montclair State about 4 years ago, him and I were having a couple of beers in a local bar, and I said, you know, finally get this is what I wanted for a very long time and so forth, but it's new place, new environment, going from, you know, upper Montclair, which is a very wealthy area, suburban area, state university, 23,000 students, to now going to an urban area, Jersey City, 3,600 students, private school. There's a lot of differences. And he goes, he smiled halfway through his sip. He chuckled and he goes, I wonder how long will this last? And I go, what do you mean? He goes, you've always wanted to be the one leading IT. And I'm willing to bet once you get that and you do it for a number of years, you're going to want to do something more. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm somebody who enjoys challenges, enjoys difficult things, and I really like to be thrown in things when somebody says, hey, there's this project that, you know, all of us worked on for the last 3 years and we can't figure it out. Those are the ones that really intrigue me. I like difficult things, not things that are easy, not somebody who likes to mail it in or come in, you know, put my feet up on my desk, have 3 coffees and go home. So mm-hmm. I like challenges, and I really like figuring out what excites people and what is their why, right? Getting them to understand why are they there and where do they want to be in 3 to 5, and find a way, if I can, to be of small help and assistance along the way.
Do you find, though, that you have the time to, like, kind of create those plans with all of your team members?
I've made time when I started. That's a really good question, a good reminder for myself. I've made time when I started. I've met with every single full-time employee for at least an hour, and we've built in a lot of things. I have a memory that's fairly good, sometimes to my own detriment, but I remember a lot of things. And we were able to deliver on some of these things that folks wanted 2, 3, 4 years later. But you're right. I don't think I have done a good job in following up with people more formally and saying, hey, it's been now 2 years, or it's been now 4 years. Have we gotten you closer to where you want it to be? Some I know we have, because I know, you know, some were smaller things. We had an individual who was remarkable at what she was doing, but she was an outside employee. She wanted to get her master's degree at our school, mm-hmm. but because she wasn't a university employee, she would have to pay. Mm-hmm. I found a way to make her a university employee, and then she got her master's degree this past May, free of charge, right? So that's easier to check off.
Right.
We have had some other folks who just wanted to go move from more telecom into networking and, you know, be helped with CCNA and Cisco Certified Network Associate and the network professional courses and certifications, and we did that. Mm-hmm. Others wanted to move into an area as they're more natural fit for their behaviors and their personalities, and we did that. Others wanted to go in some other directions that we haven't been able to deliver on just yet, but we're hopeful that we'll be able to do that in years to come.
Yeah. And I guess I didn't mean to ask the question as like an attack, right? Not to say like, are you like not doing that?
No. Because one thing about me, I mean, we just kind of met, right? You can't even do quotes, air quotes, because it's
we're
audio.
We're friends now. We're good. We're friends.
But I'm really someone whose ego doesn't bruise very easily. And I like to say what I think, and I love when people tell us, you know, are very honest with me, because there's no, life is precious and it's wonderful and it's beautiful, and it's to a degree way too short for anybody to be fake and be what they're not, or to pretend to be something or someone they're not. So I love when people come in, you know, ask, hey, you said X, Y, and Z. I think that's nonsense. And here's why I think it's nonsense. Sure, let's talk. And I've been wrong many times in life. And I said, you know what? You're right. I was thinking about it this way, but, you know, I never considered mm-hmm. that. Now mm-hmm. that you explained it that way, that makes more sense. Let's do that. Mm-hmm. So I'm not somebody who, you know, has to have an academic world, right? Confirmation bias. I made a poor decision 6 months ago. Now I'm going to keep feeding that poor decision because I can't admit I was wrong. Mm-hmm. That's not who I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think back to the question I asked initially came from me reflecting on the fact that I've done how many performance reviews, and you set these goals, and I feel like I never personally check in on them or even sit down with my supervisor and say, like, okay, let's talk about, am I doing the things that are checkable? Like, did I go to more conferences? Did I learn that skill? But even like soft skills that, you know, you don't necessarily, there's no end point, right? Like learning more about or getting more responsibility in. But I can't even tell you how many times I've set goals like that with a supervisor at like 6 months or a year or whatever, 2 years, and don't really ever go back to them. So, yeah.
And I think, I mean, just my own personal opinion, performance reviews, the way we do in most schools, mm-hmm. are a bit outdated. You know, it's having a conversation and then having that follow-up to that conversation 6 or 12 months later, mm-hmm. Is a bit out of touch when you do stuff every single day.
Right.
So finding ways to be literally an open-door policy where people can come in and walk and talk and have conversations, mm-hmm. as opposed to waiting. Because often you'll get a performance review, whether you get it or you give it to somebody else, and they say, you know, you underperformed at X, Y, and Z. And then if you're having an honest conversation, you know somebody for a while, they say, but how long have I been doing this? Oh, you know, last 9 months. But you never told me.
Why didn't you tell me?
I didn't know. But if I knew that 9 months ago, I could have corrected it.
Right.
I could have done something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I worked at a company that used a product called 15-5, which was the intention is it takes you 15 minutes to fill it out and your supervisor 5 minutes to read it. and we would submit them on a, I want to say a biweekly basis. It's been a while. And it was actually pretty interesting because I think it allowed for a lot more reflection, because it covered like the kind of like the necessary immediate stuff, like how are you doing on these things that pertain to the right now, but then also talked about a couple like bigger overarching questions that let you do kind of like what you talked about, like if there is a problem now, I don't need to learn about it in 9 months, I can learn about it now. So it's a pretty cool product if anyone's interested in checking it out. It's called 15.5.
I will definitely take a look at that. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it was nice. And you can like customize the questions to fit your team and whoever wants to read them, and you leave comments. It was pretty nice. And the fact that it was quick, that's the whole thing too, right? Because when you fill out those reviews, it's a lot. Like you have to go through your whole year and think about what you've done and write up little summaries. But with these, it was like, what did I do over the last week? And you know, that's easy to think about. You go through your planner and you see what you checked off that week and said, oh yeah, these are the things I did. These are the people I met with. I think it's a lot more tactical too. You see what where your progress is going.
Yeah, it's fresh. It's current. It makes sense. What I would love for more colleges, universities to do is do the reviews the other way, right? Have also the employees review their supervisor.
Absolutely.
Yeah, 360 reviews. Yeah.
Because, and then they can be honest and, you know, maybe completely anonymous, but it's important to understand what people think of you, because sometimes you do things that, and you don't mean them in a particular way, but they come off that way, right? One of the things that stand out to me, I have a friend who was an executive in a financial services industry in New York, and this is his story from probably a decade ago. He was in this big executive meeting, and he was working, I mean, a very wealthy firm, and they had a number of these kind of executive coaches present for the whole executive team. And when the meeting was over, his executive coach approached them, and this woman goes, so are you angry? And he goes, no. Are you upset? No. Are you frustrated? Is something not, you know, going the way you would like it to go? He goes, no, everything's good. She goes, well, you might want to tell your face that, right? Because she goes, I was sitting there in the corner of the room, and just by your facial expressions and the way your gestures and the way you were looking, half the room was terrified because they all thought they, you know, failed at whatever the tasks were ahead of them. And he took that to heart and adjusted that. He was, you know, self-aware enough to understand that, you know, him being the boss of a particular unit and how he talks to people, how he looks at them, whether he smiles or not, makes them react in a certain way.
Yeah.
And he actually was intentional in making those corrections subsequently.
And that's like hard feedback to give someone, right? Like it's, yeah. I feel like it's almost as hard as like, oh, you have something in your teeth. Like it's something that most often people don't realize that they're doing. Like I'm like that. I apparently have a very like sour expression on my face and I don't realize it. And I'm like same way, like everything's good. What are you talking about? And so for someone to kind of call me out on it, I appreciate that.
Right.
Yeah, I support that. Do you have, Logan, you said 360 reviews. Do you guys do that?
So for the higher level deans and associate provosts, they do that work within the provost area. They do that. And they also send it to folks who work with those particular like deans and such. So I get a 360 review for the associate provost and dean of enrollment. Like I've gotten that before. If he chose that, you know, he wants the feedback from me too. That's cool. But my boss actually asks us during our reviews to bring a few things that we think he could improve on. And that's kind of required. Like he's got to say, there's got to be something. You've got to tell me something. And if you don't tell him something, he will just sit there and just stare at you until you tell him something, which is great. And that's one of the things that I've really enjoyed with him, because, you know, sometimes there are things that, you know, you need to feel comfortable talking to him about. It's good. And my boss is awesome. So it's great. And that's a good thing. I've always been lucky here at Belmont that I've had like supervisors and even their supervisors that are, you know, vice presidents or even provosts have always been amazing in just letting me talk to them too about my ideas. So it's gone up the chain, like being able to talk to folks up the chain and things like that, not necessarily about what's going on here, but something that's like university wide or something that's concerning me or something like that. They've always been really open and, you know, great for that. And I've been lucky to always have great leaders that I've worked under. So they're a lot like you, actually. So it's great.
Wow, way to like butter up our guest, Logan. That was a nice little drop.
But
it's
true. Like a lot of the things that you've said, just really remind me of people that I work for. Which is good. That's a compliment, in a lot of ways. So, yeah.
I have worked for some amazing people, and I've worked for those who are a bit less amazing. Let's leave it at that. And it is extremely like who you report to, who your boss is on paper and formally is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they have direct impact or indirect impact on you know, your happiness, your satisfaction, your progress, your growth, whether we like it or not. And I've learned some wonderful things from both sets of folks, right? What to do and what not to do. So it is great to hear that you're fortunate enough to have people around you who are self-aware and don't take themselves too seriously, right? Mm-hmm. We're all part of the same team. Everybody's equally important. Nobody's worth more or more important or gets more, you know, says or words per minute than anybody else simply because of their title. It should not be that way. Mm-hmm. Best ideas always have to win, and they come from everywhere, not just from the top. It's actually most of the time they shouldn't be coming from the top anyway.
Well, as Jackie and I have discussed on various episodes of the show, the most important people are the ones that fix your computer, make your food, and, you know,
cut your paycheck
and order your toilet paper. So
those are important.
Very true. Very true.
Very important people.
I think I've heard that podcast.
We say it a lot. That's really what the tagline, I guess, of the show should be.
Should it?
Get but that on a t-shirt.
I think that's all the time we have for this episode.
A great nugget of wisdom to end on, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Milos, we really appreciate you being on the show with us tonight. It was super great to chat with you.
Thank you both for having me. It's been my pleasure and honor to be part of your show.
Aw, well, thank you. It's been our honor as well. And listeners, we really appreciate you sticking around and chatting with us tonight. You can head over to our website. We are at higher-ed.social. And you can get links to pretty much everything we talked about today, including ways to connect with Milos online. You can also subscribe to us pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts. But if you use Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. It really helps us know what you like, what you don't like, but also helps other listeners find the show. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at HESpodcast. And definitely send us a tweet. We love chatting with you, sending you gifts. And if you want to be on the show, let us know. That's what Milos did. Tweet us, find us on LinkedIn, whatever. We want to meet you. Higher Ed Social is produced by Emma Hawes, and our social media is maintained by Mariah Barksdale. And we are part of the Connect EDU Network, which is the first podcast network for higher education. If you want to learn more, you can visit the website, which is connectedu.network, and you'll find some really cool shows. Pretty much anywhere you work on campus, there is something for you. Thanks again for listening, and have a great week. Thanks so much again for listening to this episode of Higher Ed Social. If you forgot from the first announcement, we're still doing a listener survey.
So head over to our website, that's highered.social/survey, and that's where you'll find it. It'll take you 5 minutes, promise. And at the end of the survey, there's an opportunity for you to enter yourself into a drawing for a free seat to the upcoming Higher Ed Experts Analytics Conference. That is a $500 value, so you don't want to miss out. Again, that's our website, highered.social/survey. Thanks.